Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right, we're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 130 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Aquaman number 43, Batman number 61, Catwoman number 6, Justice League number 14, and the Aquaman movie. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news, the final season of Gotham begins Thursday, January 3rd, 2019.
I know there's a lot of people that are excited for it. I will admit I'm behind. I probably would be if I was caught up, but I think half a season behind. It's had a pretty good run.
Yeah, I'm even more behind than you are. But I'm hoping to catch up with it this summer. You know, they'll probably have the whole series on Netflix, and I can just binge it.
Yeah. Yeah, I will admit one. I am excited for the show to end, not to do anything to do with my opinion of the show, but because I'm hoping that it maybe will open up some doors for Batman to appear in some other TV stuff.
Yeah, no, that would be awesome. All right, for our next bit of DC news, Wonder Woman 1984 has wrapped filming. But the sad news is we still have to wait over a year because the release date for it is June 5th, 2020.
I'm sure they have wrapped filming initially, but there's no way they're not going to go back and do reshoots.
Yeah, there's always reshoots.
Right. That's why I always think it's silly when they announce that it's wrapped production. I'm like, yes, I know that's true, but like, have you actually?
All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Green Arrow is ending in March with issue number 50. Spinning out of the events of Justice League, No Justice, and Heroes in Crisis, when a black ops organization discovers Green Arrow's long-held secret, a mysterious weapon in the form of a box given to him by the Justice League, the black ops organization will deploy their top undercover agent, Black Canary.
It's an interesting premise. I am not terribly surprised that they're ending it. I still think they did it. This was one of the books that had a disservice done to it by going bi-weekly. I thought that was just way too much for Green Arrow. I know they eventually got away from it, but still, I don't know. I think this is another character that would do well with a series of miniseries.
I agree with you. And we were reviewing it for quite a while there, and then we just kind of dropped off our radar. Mm-hmm. The stories just weren't as good. But we will at least check out this ending arc. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, DC Universe has released their 2019 promo trailer. And it looks like we got some good stuff coming.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to a bunch of the stuff that they're doing. The Doom Patrol, I know they had like a little mini Doom Patrol teaser, I think a week or two ago, and it was barely anything, but it was still like, I really want to check out that show. Just looks so weird.
It does. And I kept seeing comments about Cyborg. What's Cyborg doing on Doom Patrol?
I will say Cyborg did not look great, but... Apart from that, I am very intrigued by the show.
That looks like a bunch of other good stuff coming out, so excited about that. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Yes, yes, hello. Let's talk about the Flopcast.
Every week, we give podcast listeners a chance to come and join us in Chickentown,
where we talk about Saturday morning cartoons, comics and science fiction conventions, music and concert reports, 70s and 80s pop culture, and for no good reason, chickens.
Boy, we're weird.
Oh, we are ridiculous.
We're proud members of the ESO Network, and you can find us at flopcast.net.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Aquaman number 43. I gave it the old thumbs up. Aquaman has lost his memory and washed up on the shore of this island after the events of Drowned Earth. And he's found by a woman named Callie, who lives in the village of Unspoken Water.
I'm really intrigued by this premise because it definitely, initially it was kind of like if he just, we were wondering where exactly he washed up. I think, doesn't it still seem a little bit unclear if he's really on Earth or not?
Yes, it's very unclear. And when you're reading the story, it talks about the people that are there. They don't exactly say how they got there. It sounded like they may have come in by a storm somehow or been shipwrecked or something. You know, it doesn't really explain what it is. And it seems like it's a strange type of place. Yeah. So it's not necessarily on Earth. That's what I'm very curious to find out.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it's on an alien planet either, but like maybe some sort of like magical dimension or something like that. Like I'm very intrigued. I was very intrigued by the premise.
I mean, Aquaman's the main character, but the other character, her name is Callie, and she's the one that found Aquaman, and she believes he's a gift from the sea. She said that he was born on the day she found him to save them all, which I found kind of interesting, her kind of take on it.
Yeah.
Now, as we explored as we kind of see Aquaman interacting with the village, we're finding out there's not enough meat to feed the village. And when they think they're going to catch all these fish, they end up being dead.
And then they turn out they think the person responsible is Callie's mom, which is so I'm curious if she's actually going to be an antagonist or if just being teased as an antagonist and actually not being a bad guy. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, they said her name was Nama, and they for some reason they sent her away to a different part of the island. But, you know, they kept her child for some reason. It's very weird.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that she is causing all their problems there in some sort of revenge. So they've asked Aquaman to take Callie back to her mother to make peace. And they said in exchange he could have a drink of the Unspoken Water, which is supposed to return his memories. When I read that, I was like, man, that's weird. What is this Unspoken Water? It's all very weird.
It is weird, but like, all very interesting too. Like it's one of those things, they've found a way, they've focused on like the mystery of the place and not the mystery of Aquaman figuring out who he is, because that's always frustrating as a reader, because you're like, I know who he is.
Yeah, we know who he is. Of course, the villagers call him Andy, but Callie, she calls him Arusio. So she's the only one that calls him this other name. I thought that was funny when he's like, that means orange. But yeah, I'm very interested in learning more about this story. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Batman number 61. Gave this the old thumbs up. I find this new villain very intriguing, but I also thought this issue was kind of confusing. And I think it was because we were seeing things unfold from Matthew's point of view, and then at the end of the issue they kind of broke out into the third person.
when we finally kind of get out of his psychosis and see the reality of what is actually going on. I remember being intrigued by I had kind of forgotten about this guy. I can't remember when was it. It was in like the 30s or so, the issue number in the 30s or so.
It was issue number 38. I went back and reread it. I read this issue. I was like, oh, this, because they said it in the issue. It was issue 38. So I re-downloaded 38 and read it again. And then went back and read this one again.
I remember being intrigued by that kid. And it's interesting that they're pulling him back. So that's who they seem to be hinting that the Batman in the present that we're seeing is. And I'd be curious if that is the case, how Bane managed to age him up.
Now, I'm going to give you my theory on it, because I don't think it's the kid. When we were reading the issue, we learned that the butler has somehow broken out of prison. And I'm wondering if it's the butler's Thomas Wayne, playing as Thomas Wayne, Batman.
Interesting. That could be. Yeah, I don't know. Pardon me, I feel like the focus on the kid, though, makes me think it's the kid. Because we haven't seen the kid at all. When we had that thing showing all of the different people under Bane's control, I don't remember seeing the kid.
No, I didn't see the kid in there either. I mean, it's possible he's Thomas Wayne, but we're seeing this issue. I think this is supposed to have happened in the past. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
because
right.
At the end of the issue, they're moving him to Arkham Asylum because he's too dangerous to keep in regular prison. Because he keeps killing inmates.
I think he's the Batman. I'm curious how they're going to do it. I would not be surprised if you're right, though, and if it was the butler. I could see it being either one.
Yeah, because they would have to, for it to be the kid, they would have to up. And that's the other thing that doesn't make sense about it, Cletus. He wants to be Bruce Wayne, so why would he go and be Thomas Wayne? The Thomas Wayne Batman, you know what I mean?
I think that kid's being manipulated by Bane. And so I think Bane probably tells him, you know, this guy that you really want to be, Bruce Wayne, is actually Batman. And then that kid goes, oh. And I think that's what, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that happening. It's very intriguing. I can't wait for the next issue, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Catwoman number 6. I gave this the old thumbs up. This issue started off right where the other one left off. We see Catwoman escaping from being captured last issue. And basically we see her running up the stairs from the basement where she was captured at in search of Mrs. Creel. And we basically see Catwoman, you know, fighting her way through the different men until she gets to Mrs. Creel. And then, of course, we see their confrontation. She ends up shooting her son, Adam. And Catwoman gets away, and both Mrs. Creel and Catwoman are on the run at the end of the issue.
I thought this was an extremely satisfying conclusion to the first arc that I've been a huge fan of the whole time. I really like what Catwoman highlights. She's like, all I did was come to tell you no. And instead of just accepting that, you went on this whole thing that has ended with all of these terrible things, all because you simply could not accept that I wouldn't work for you. I basically straight up told you, I'm not going to work for you, but I'm not going to work against you. And you couldn't accept that. And now look what's happened. You did all of this to yourself. And the villain's refusal to accept that she's the one responsible for this then is then shown once again when she shoots her son and immediately blames Catwoman for it.
Yep, exactly. And we know it's not we could tell this is not the end of this villain. She's coming after Catwoman because she's blaming Catwoman for all this stuff.
I mean, she basically toppled her own empire single-handedly. Like, she brought herself down for the dumbest reason. I just thought the whole thing was just, the whole time, the way that Joel Jones wrote that whole arc and set it up, that the villain basically plays herself the entire time, it was just excellent. I thought it was the perfect payoff to the story. I really, really enjoyed this entire arc. I highly recommend if you're reading this issue by issue, when this first arc comes out as a collected volume, definitely go out and get it because it's really good. The artwork's fantastic. But she's a great writer, too. That's the thing. Joel Jones is not just a fantastic artist. She is a really good writer also. It's just a great arc.
Yeah, it was. And I'm kind of sad that she's going to be leaving the artist part of it.
Yeah.
But I understand it's hard to write and illustrate at the same time.
I see. I agree with you, which is why I think that DC shouldn't force it to be a monthly comic. I think they should just let her do like a series of six issues. Like, let her release the six that we got that was really good. Give her like half a year to get the next one done and then publish that.
Yeah, but you know what? I think there's a reason behind them not doing that. And that's because I think she's going to be coming back into the Batman title sooner than later.
Possible. Yeah, you could be right. You could be right about that. I don't know, man. She's so good. Joel Jones is so good. I was thrilled when they managed to snag her to a contract. I was like, man, there's no way that's not going to be great. It's really, I feel like, just like with Tom King, I feel like both of those have really paid off big time for DC.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Justice League number 14. I gave this the old thumbs up. I really like how in this issue they focused mainly on Martian Manhunter, John Stewart, and Hawkgirl's visit to Thanagar Prime. And we got to explore a little bit about this world. I really liked how they did that.
I agree. I'm hoping we get to see more of it because I was really intrigued by everything they were talking about with it, how it was sort of this vault, essentially, for older civilizations. And it was like, man, that is super cool. I'm sure we're going to get to see more of that, but just like that, there's so much you could do with that alone. I know that veers away from the story that they're telling, but it was just like, man, I would love to see more, like explore that world more.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's very interesting. The other thing I thought it was interesting about this issue is we have two Hawkgirls, basically. We have Kendra, and then we have Shayera, who's mm-hmm. the Empress there on Thanagar Prime. And that was intriguing, and it was their interactions with each other was intriguing, especially when Kendra touched her, and she was able to discover that when they first got there, they were told that the elder Martian that lived there was dead, but then they find out she wasn't. So I'm curious why they are hiding that information.
And what was really intriguing too was the initially we know Shayera's there, and she Kendra should also be Shayera. They talk about that, like they should be the same person, so they shouldn't both be able to exist at the same time. And then we see at the end of the issue Carter Hall, the Thanagarian, shows up too. And so it's all very interesting. Like, why are there the Thanagarian versions of Hawkman and Hawkgirl there when the like Earth versions of them still exist?
Yeah, because you know when he showed up, I was like, wait a minute, is this a different Hawkman from the Hawkman that's on Earth? So I was curious about that too.
So something funky is going on with that, and I look forward to finding out what's going on with that because it's kind of interesting having both the Thanagarian version and the Kendra version.
I agree with you there. Now, I had a question for you. When did John Stewart get that tattooed ring? I don't remember that.
Okay, I'm glad. I actually, when I saw that, I was like, I must be an idiot because I don't know when that happened. I have no idea. That could not have been, that was an Injustice League, right?
Not that I recall.
It must have happened in Green Lantern and we didn't read the whatever title it was that happened in.
That's possible. We did read the end of that Green Lantern run, though. I don't remember him having that tattooed ring.
I felt stupid. I'm not going to lie to you. I felt stupid when he talked about that because I was like, I don't remember that. And maybe it did happen in Justice League, and I just don't remember.
That's weird that neither one of us would remember, though.
No, I honestly thought for sure you would know, and I was just going to play along with it. Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I was like, wait a minute, I don't remember this happening. I'm curious how that happened. Might have to go back and do some research because apparently we missed something, unless they're just writing it in like it's supposed to have happened and it didn't actually happen. You know what I mean? Kind of retroactive, the story.
They didn't do an editor's note on that, which I was surprised by that, because I was like, man, I feel like it must have happened in Justice League and we don't remember.
Well, that's something that we're gonna have to check into. Also wanted to bring up in this issue, we see Batman use Jarro to look into Starman's mind. And some of the things we learn from that, we learn about Kender's wings, the beings in the Source Wall, the mind in the totality is supposed to be their queen. You know, Batman just gave us fascinating tidbits before Superman yanked Jarro off of Starman. And I'm like, you know, it was like the writer was teasing us with what's coming up.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm intrigued at what the overall mystery is with this whole Justice League thing. I'm also curious if and when Snyder resolves that. Is that the end of his run, or is he going to keep going after that?
Hard for us to know.
Yeah.
So, but very intriguing. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk the Aquaman movie.
Do you enjoy TV shows, movies, video games, comics, or novels? Do you enjoy listening to people discuss geeky topics without getting bent out of shape when they disagree? If you do, then the 42cast is right for you. We're a podcast with a rotating cast of guests that discusses a new topic every week. You can find us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Google Play, or 42cast.com. You can also support us and the entire ESO Network by going to patreon.com/ESO Network. That's the 42cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
And we're back! Let's talk Aquaman the movie! And we have a few guests joining us to talk about that. First, let's welcome back Kevin Eldridge from the Flopcast.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Cletus. It's great to be back here again at Earth Station DCU to talk some Aquaman.
Yes, very excited about talking to Aquaman. And also joining us tonight for the first time is Nathan Laws from the 42cast. Welcome, Nathan.
Welcome, and thank you for having me on, Drew. This is great to be on another show on the network.
Yes, I'm glad to have you on. I've listened to your podcast quite a few times, especially when you guys talk DC stuff. I noticed you guys released Legends Tomorrow from last season this week. So yes. I've already downloaded.
It's a time travel show, so it works.
So I've already downloaded. I'm excited to listen to it, see what you guys think of it.
Okay. Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun doing it. And yeah, I'm chronically behind because of all the stuff in my personal life, but definitely try to cover all the Brillante stuff.
Well, I like how you guys cover a whole season. Cletus and I, we do episode by episode, but just right. Basically because that's how we're set up. But I like how you guys cover the whole season, and I like getting different people's take on what their thoughts are on stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's the whole reason why I do the podcast, is getting other people's take, because sometimes I find out that I'm the only one that thinks that, you know, a certain way about something, so it's kind of nice to have, you know, different people give me their points of view, too, because sometimes, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, I never thought of things in a certain way, so, you know, I like having that. But if everybody agrees with each other on my show, then I'm doing something wrong, because I think that's boring when everybody's just like, yep, I agree.
Sometimes, like, I think people get tired of just hearing me and Cletus all the time, because sometimes we agree and sometimes we don't. But it's always nice to have guests on and get different opinions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's get into Aquaman. And what I want to start off first with is what everybody's first introduction to Aquaman was. And let's start with you, Kevin. I have a feeling I know what you're going to say.
I'm going to guess that it was Super Friends.
That's what I would have guessed too.
And I certainly was, you know, reading the comics all through the 70s and 80s after that, but it's in all likelihood that was my first exposure to the character. That would have been that long season one Super Friends.
All right, Nathan, what was your first introduction to Aquaman?
Oh, definitely Super Friends. Super Friends, I watched that on and off because I grew up in the 80s and, you know, all the old Super Friends series were in syndication. There were Super Friends off and on throughout the 80s, like new episodes and whatnot. And yeah, that was my first exposure to the DC pantheon entirely. I mean, I did see the Superman movies in the 80s too, but I'm pretty sure I saw Super Friends before I even saw a Superman movie. So that is my primary or I guess first exposure to DC.
All right, Clintus, what was your first introduction to Aquaman?
I'm pretty sure it was the Justice League animated series. I'm assuming it was probably Justice League Unlimited because I don't think he was in the original. So I think it was that. If it wasn't that, it was a random Justice League comic that I would have read at some point. But I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was the animated Justice League show.
Mm.
I had a feeling that was your first introduction.
I'm an era behind you guys. So.
Yes, wow.
Well, did you watch Superman the Animated Series at all? Because that did have an Aquaman episode.
No, I didn't. I think that I think I was like when I was the show that when I was growing up that was airing as I was growing up was Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. So like even Batman the Animated Series was kind of before me a little bit.
He's a youngin. And my first introduction to Aquaman was Super Friends also. And I had a feeling you guys, Nathan and Kevin, I had a feeling you guys would say Super Friends also. And I think I started reading the Aquaman comics, I think it was late 80s, early 90s, when I actually started reading the comics. I mean, I read about Aquaman in Justice League, of course. But I started picking up his title, I think, on Peter like David.
Peter David run?
Yeah.
Yes, that's.
You can never go wrong with like, Peter David. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was like mid-90s. I think that started in 94, I want to say.
So I think that's when I started getting Aquaman.
But
I had more money then, too.
Yeah, well, you know, Aquaman had a very bumpy history as far as trying to carry his own comic book, like all through the 70s and 80s. Just little starts and stops and a mini series or two and backup strips. But like he was Aquaman for like kind of becoming a joke for so long. You know, Aquaman was a major character, certainly in the 60s and heading into the 70s, you know, even before Super Friends, where we all probably first saw him. He had his own cartoon in the 60s, you know, the Filmation cartoons, which weren't really around. They were around a little bit in reruns when I was a kid, but I don't think I would have seen them before the Super Friends. But yeah, he was a major enough character to carry his own show and be one of those founding Super Friends members, you know, even ahead of characters like Flash or Green Lantern.
Right. Now, I found out that Aquaman's first appearance was in a comic called More Fun. It was in More Fun 90, number 73. And it was November 1941 during the World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That was Green Arrow's first appearance was that exact same issue.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah, and both created by the same writer, that Mort Weisinger created both of them. And yeah, they're both from More Fun 73. A weird trivia about Aquaman in the comics is that Aquaman was not on the cover of that comic book, and in fact did not appear on the cover of a comic book until the Justice League started.
The Brave and the Bold, number 28.
Yeah. So all through the 40s and 50s, he was just kind of chugging along as a backup series and never even made an appearance on a comic book cover.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting, I thought.
It's come a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you consider he's DC's answer to the Submariner. So,
yeah.
You know, Namor was getting his own books even in the 40s. And and was a cover and a headliner. And now it's flipped. You know, Aquaman's a way more popular character and more people know about him than Namor. Yeah.
And I'm sure that has to do with the animated series, Super Friends and Justice League animated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think also he's a character that's more accessible at a younger age. Like, Namor is a hard sell, I think, for younger kids, just who he is as a character. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I feel like Aquaman is something you can make into a... easier into a kid's character. I feel like that's one of the reasons why he's caught on a larger scale than Namor has.
Yeah, I actually went back and read a lot of the Golden Age Submariner stuff, and like in his first issue, he's like slitting the throats of divers who have gotten too close to Atlantis. And so, like, this is pretty dark. So, yeah, I can see how that would be.
All right, well, let's get into talking about the movie itself. Let's start with you, Nathan. Did you like the movie?
Yes. Should I elaborate, or is this just a yes or no answer?
Good night, everybody.
Go ahead and elaborate a little bit, and
So, I mean, if we want to look at the macro scale and what DC's been doing lately, you know, the Snyder stuff hasn't hit very strongly with me. Loved Wonder Woman. I felt like Justice League was a step in the right direction. Aquaman is a fun movie. I don't think it's a very challenging movie. I don't think they really took many risks, but at the same time, I think the DC just needed a win, and so I think that they got what they wanted. So it follows a familiar tropes. You know, there's nothing really surprising in it, but it's a fun movie. It has a great score. I actually was surprised by how much I love the music in it. The CG is really well done. I do feel like at some points it's too much, where we're panning around looking at all the CGI and we've kind of lost like the emotional connection to the characters because we're not even following the characters we care about anymore. We're just watching this whole battle play out. And I'm personally not a fan of that, but it's all well done. It all looks beautiful. And yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, it was a great adventure story and something that, you know, you can watch and come out of the movie theater feeling good. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
All right. What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, you know, I agree with everything Nathan just said in that what Nathan said about sort of playing it safe as far as a story. Like, we're going to go right down the middle. Here's what people want or expect these days out of one of these big new superhero movies. And that's what they did. But at the same time, they made it so epic. Like, they made this as big as it could possibly be as far as the scope and the characters and the look and building this whole world and the various factions of Atlanteans and all the various sea creatures and the vehicles. And they just went so big, and which just made it just so rich visually. And so, yeah, that's not the greatest movie in history as far as having the most brilliant statements to make about about life or whatever, but to have a big, fun superhero movie and also just done on such an epic level, I think they absolutely succeeded.
If I may step in just for a second here, just to tee up on something Kevin said, one thing that I really liked is that DC seems to have stepped back a bit from some of the more fantastic elements before now, because even with Wonder Woman, they said, yeah, the gods were real, but they're all dead now, basically, except for Ares. And in this, it was like, Atlantis is totally real. It's this whole fantasy environment under the sea. There's like five different races of aquatic people down there, all this different stuff. And so I really like that they're like actually going like for the mythology now, rather than trying to be like, okay, superpowers are real, but let's back off from anything like that's too magical or too, you know, out there, you know, sci-fi. So, yeah.
I think the reason behind that is superhero movies and the television shows have been pushing that envelope more and more, you know, getting the general public to accept that kind of thing instead of turning a blind eye to it. You know what I mean?
I think it's more them realizing that the general public was willing to accept this all along and they just didn't trust that they would, in my opinion.
Yeah, because Marvel, you look at Marvel, they just go for it. You know, it's like, yep, there's Asgard and there's Thanos and he's this crazy Titan and then there's these Infinity Stones and everything. And Marvel hasn't really backed away from much. They've backed away from a little bit and changed some things. But yeah, I think the DC is realizing that, yeah, we're up for it. You know, it's not going to confuse the public if you start throwing in Greek gods and stuff.
All right, Cletus, what did you think of the movie?
I definitely enjoyed it. I will say my viewing, I think, was hurt a little bit. I think I was the only one in my group that did enjoy it. when somebody asked me to describe it, to me, at least visually, it was a Zack Snyder movie if it wasn't pretentious. You know what I mean? Like, if you took out all the like ridiculousness that like, oh, this references this one Renaissance painting and then this other philosopher from the 1940s, and it's just like, okay, if you take all that stuff out, Okay. That's Aquaman. And so I liked it. I thought visually it was incredible. I liked the idea of two simultaneous hero quests going on, where you had Aquaman on his quest and Ocean Master on his quest, and they kind of meet up at the end. That idea I thought was super clever, but I thought a lot of the exposition that was written to get us there was very clunky, especially when it was delivered by Mira. I personally thought she was a weak link in the movie, but I enjoyed the movie. I watched it. I got done with it. I was like, that's everything I could want out of an Aquaman movie. And for some of the people that were with me, I think they just found some things about Aquaman inherently ridiculous. And that wasn't anything I could do to argue that point, because they thought Black Manta looked absurd. And I was like, okay, that's fair. But if you like Black Manta, you want him to look like that. Like, if you change his look, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's like, you can't, like, how do you argue that? You're like, okay, that's your opinion. You're wrong, but that's your opinion.
Black Manta was, like, my favorite thing about the movie.
I don't know. And that was the thing. I was like, I don't know how to respond to that criticism, because that was, like, the perfect Black Manta. But okay. Yeah, so for me, they just embraced who Aquaman is. They didn't apologize for it. They just went for it. And I enjoyed it. Like, it's certainly not a perfect film. Like I said, I thought there was some bad exposition in it, but very enjoyable overall.
Now, I really enjoyed the movie. I love how they had Aquaman's origin in it. I like how they explored the different versions of the Atlanteans. The movie did have a little bit of cheese to it, but overall, I really enjoyed it. And the other thing I thought they tried to do was, I think they thought this is our only chance for an Aquaman movie and we might not get a sequel. So they tried to pack as much Aquaman lore into it as they could. But I do like what they did with the movie. All right, let's talk about Jason Momoa. How did you like him as Aquaman? Let's start with you, Cletus.
I really like Jason Momoa. I like him as Aquaman, but I do think one of the things that kept this from being like an incredible superhero film was that he's an okay actor, I think, at best. He's super likable. He's very engaging as an actor, but he's like okay as an actor. And then when he was supported by, in my opinion, a subpar actress, it really kind of highlighted some of his deficiencies as an actor. So like I at no point did I have any complaints. I was like, I wouldn't want anybody else playing him. But I was like, yeah, but also, like, there's only so much he can do overall. But I know I sound like I'm being really harsh, but I do like him as Aquaman.
All right. What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, I think he's fine. I think it was interesting just what a buildup it's been to getting Jason Momoa in an Aquaman movie, you know, where we had Justice League, and then we had even the little flash of him in Batman vs. Superman before that. That, you know, it was, how many years ago did they cast this guy to star in this movie that we've been waiting for all this time? And meanwhile, just getting a little bit more of him. I've only seen Justice League once, and that would have been when it came out 2 years ago or whenever that was. And so I'm not sure how accurate my memory is, but did they dial down the kind of goofiness of him? Like, was he being a little more kind of frat boy goofy in Justice League? And there's still a little bit of that in Aquaman, but I feel like they turned that down a little bit, which I think was probably for the best.
I think they did.
Yeah, I do too. I remembered him being a lot more goofy in the Justice League movie.
Yeah, and I get it. Well, it's an ensemble movie, obviously, about a team, so like he can be the goofy one, whereas this one, he can't be the goofy one because it's his movie. So that, I think that was smart to... He has to be the more serious, heroic one in times as well.
All right, Nathan, what about you?
I think my feelings are closer to what Cletus was saying. I don't feel that Jason Momoa has a lot of range. I mean, he does angry and confused really well. And, you know, I kind of described him as a likable thug, you know, because it's like he has a good heart. But basically most of his, you know, his acting is basically going, me big man, you know, me angry kind of stuff, you know. And I feel like how that hurts the movie is that the case was never made for why he would make a good king. I mean, they said, oh, because you're from two worlds, you're going to be a good king. But it's like, okay, yeah, he's not going to go for all-out war that's going to kill a lot of people like Ocean Master is. But, you know, at the same time, when he's mainly confused through most of the movie and doesn't have like a whole lot of like good handle for how things run in Atlantis and stuff, I came away from it going, you haven't made the case for why this guy should be the one running things. And so I felt like that was a problem. He's a fun guy. I felt like he would have been a perfect Lobo. When I look at Jason Momoa, I'm like, if you painted his skin, he looks like Lobo stepped out of the comic. You know? I just feel like Aquaman might not have necessarily been the right role for him. But and I don't want to sound too harsh, just like Cleve, I don't want to sound too harsh because I still like the movie. I just felt like they didn't make the case for, you know, why, you know, he is this guy who's going to be this great ruler.
That's a good point. I would have to agree with that. It's not something that really occurred to me, but yeah. I will say one thing the best thing I can say about Jason Momoa, one thing I think maybe you could argue was a good reason they cast him. I can't imagine many actors embracing the role as much as he has. Like, he has really just been like, hell yeah, man, I'm Aquaman. Like, I just feel like most actors wouldn't go for it the way he did.
Yeah.
My take on Jason Momoa, I've watched him. I used to watch him on Stargate Atlantis, and mm-hmm. I knew what kind of character he was going to be playing. So I wasn't surprised by his version of Aquaman. He always plays a man's man kind of character, and mm-hmm. that's exactly what he brought to the Aquaman. And him not wanting to be king made perfect sense to me. But I have to agree with you, Nathan, that he's not really king material. And mm-hmm. they were trying to put him in that role that he didn't want to be in.
Right.
So I have to agree with that. But I thought he was a pretty good Aquaman. Of course, he played the character exactly like I expected him to. So maybe that's kind of why I more embraced him as Aquaman. I knew what I was getting.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's Jason Momoa is not really a lead man in a movie, as more of a kind of a sidekick he is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Well, there was one scene that really stuck out to me where Mira's just saved his father, which is the only person he has a strong connection to in the whole world. And he's just like, thank you. And I'm like, that line was delivered so flat. I was like, this should be hugely emotional for you that you couldn't save your father. You were convinced he was going to die, and then she saved him. There should be more to that. And it was so flat. And I was just like, okay, you need to, you know, I want a little more range there.
All right. Well, let's talk about Mira. What did you guys think of Mira? Let's start with you, Kevin.
Not great. I this is not an actor that I'm familiar with, Amber Heard. I don't think I've seen her in anything other than the couple of times we've seen her as Mira now. And I don't feel like she really brought much to the part. So I don't think not a big problem. She was okay, I guess. But there probably could have been a lot more to that character than what we got.
All right. What about you, Nathan?
I'm not really familiar with her either. She did not really impress me very strongly. I also felt like the whole love arc was kind of, it felt like it didn't really have a good through line. It's kind of like, yeah, she's kind of wishy-washy on him in the beginning, but then kind of by the end, it's like, oh, I love you, and let's kiss in the middle of a battle. You know? But I don't feel like that was ever a very convincing transition there. It just kind of happened, you know? And so, yeah. But, I mean, I feel like she was fine for what she did for the most part. Definitely pleasant on the eyes. But, yeah, she wasn't very impressive to me either.
All right. What about you, Cletus?
Well, I've already kind of spoiled my thoughts on it. I thought she was the weakest part of the movie, to be honest with you. And I think her being bad hurt the movie disproportionately, like more than it should have, because Jason Momoa is again like a mediocre actor. It sticks out when the other leading actor is also not good. It makes the scenes where it's just the two of them together, you get these just two stiff actors bouncing these just dull lines off of each other. It was some of those scenes, some of the exposition that she has to deliver is clunky. Like it would be tough for any actress to deliver, but I mean, she really just like picks the worst possible way to deliver some of those lines. And then she's bouncing them off of a brick wall. So I just, and then also that flute scene was the most inexplicable scene in the movie. I have no idea why they included that in the film. That was it was like I really want a scene where I show off how good of a flute player I am. We need to have this. This has to be in the movie. Because it was like, what are you guys doing? It was just so, that was the one time where it was almost like the sort of like so bad it's good kind of scenes where it was so absurd. You're like, of course this is in this movie.
Yeah, I thought their relationship was kind of forced. It felt forced to me anyways. And I just felt weird that Mira was the one to approach Aquaman, wanting him to be king when she was engaged to the half-brother. Mm-hmm. I thought that was weird too.
Yeah, I felt like they just never connected the dots between why she was so standoffish on him. It was just like, I'm just here because Volko told me to be here. You know, and then goes from there to like, let's make out in the middle of a battle.
Yeah.
Kind of like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't want to keep on evoking other movies, but I felt the same way in Man of Steel, where I felt like they're just like, well, everyone knows Lois and, you know, Superman get together, so let's just have them kiss, you know, at the end of the movie, even though the characters that they had presented in that movie, I don't feel like had gotten to that stage. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's all downhill after the first kiss. It's the saying that everybody says.
All right. Well, let's move on to the origin story. How did you like how they presented the origin? Let's start with you, Cletus.
I liked the way they interspliced it throughout the movie, that they kept the present of the story always kind of at the forefront, and they kind of would flash back periodically to different things. I honestly liked that a lot better than just starting with him as a kid and going up until the present. I thought that was a clever move. There was a couple things like the aquarium scene that we had seen the majority of from the trailers was, I thought, not very good, and also one of the least necessary scenes in terms of his origin, just because it basically added almost nothing. But for the most part, I liked the way that they did it. I liked that they interspliced it between different bits, and it kind of like, as it was relevant to the story, that's when they showed it. I liked that better than just doing it, you know, from point A to point B chronologically.
All right. What about you, Nathan?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that I liked too, because I'm kind of sick of the linear origin story by this point, because we've just had so many of them. So it was nice for them, even though they knew they had to present Aquaman's origin. So I think most people have heard of Aquaman, you know, from the various animated versions. You know, his origin, I don't think, is something that's well known to the general public. So they had to put that in there. And you know, it was easy to follow. It was easy to understand. And so, yeah, I feel like that they did a good job, you know, giving him that, you know, that, you know, the explanation that was needed, but also showing why he's this guy that feels kind of out of place everywhere that he is, and how he's the man trapped between two worlds and all that kind of stuff.
All right. What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, I agree that I definitely liked the way that they broke up those scenes. And I think audiences are at a point now, this where 10 years deep into the Marvel movie era at this point, and we get it. Okay, every superhero has to have an origin, but we don't have to spend half the movie building to that point. You know, it's not 1978 and we're waiting an hour for Superman to start being Superman. We don't have to go through that anymore. People can catch on, and we'll jump back and fill in some details as we need to. So yeah, I like the Mr. Miyagi kind of scenes with Volko. I thought that was fun, just dropping those in as needed to show him kind of learning. I liked the aquarium scene. I don't watch trailers, so that was completely new to me. I had not seen anything in trailers going into this, and yeah, I thought it was cool. I liked seeing all the fish just backed up against the front of the tank like that. Maybe I liked it because that part was set in Massachusetts, and I am set in Massachusetts. I thought that was nice. That sure, just kind of punch in what you need to and move on.
I really liked how they did the origin story. Honestly, they didn't spend too much time on it. I like how they established the relationship of his family and his kind of background and how he grew up and stuff like that. I like the fact that even after his mother had left them, his father would go down to the dock every morning and wait for her to come back. I thought that was kind of awesome. And I like how they finished that at the end of the movie. The problem I had with, I had a problem with Volk, what's his name? How do you pronounce his name? Volko?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the only the problem wasn't with the character, it was with the actor. I kept waiting the whole movie for him to go, "Godspeed, Spider-Man."
I actually kept saying, I kept ad-libbing in that, you know, every time he said that he wanted Arthur to be king, that he was going to be like, "So you can help me get that nasty Spider-Man."
So,
you know, I like that they kind of played him against type, and that when we see Willem Dafoe, we're waiting for him to be creepy and go bad, and you see that big crazy face of his, you know, like, uh-oh, you know, this is not going to end well. But they didn't go that way. And they let him do a different kind of character than he usually does. So I like that.
I kept expecting him to be working with Orm somehow, but he wasn't. So.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of a nice surprise, because I was expecting that also. All right, let's get to my next question for you guys. And that is, who do you think was the better villain in the movie? Ocean Master or Black Manta? Let's start with you, Nathan.
Oh, Black Manta all the way. I love how they set him up in this. I thought it was great for him to be sort of the secondary villain, but it's clear from the, you know, mid-credit scene that they had there that they're setting up a sequel for him to be the primary villain. And, you know, I just love everything about how they did. I love, again, how they went straight for the comics. They weren't like, hey, he's kind of a silly, you know, look or whatever. We'll change it up a little bit. And, you know, those beams were deadly. You know, they made that as powerful and as epic a scene as you would want it to be for him fighting Aquaman. And so I love the attitude of the revenge, you know, the whole like that as the hook for the character of getting revenge for the death of his father. So, yeah, I can't wait to see more of him. Whereas Orm to me was kind of a flat character. You know, it was basically, I'm just going to acquire this power any way possible. And because I hate the fact that I have this half-breed brother, I'm going to destroy the surface world. You know, I mean, because that seemed to be his motivation. It wasn't that he really felt that the surface world was a problem. It seemed to be more like, I hate that I have this stain on my family, so I'm just going to wipe out the whole surface world so that, you know, I can wipe out that stain also. And I just, you know, I've seen that kind of villain before, and I just don't really have a lot of interest, you know, in it. So I'm much more keen on seeing more Black Manta.
All right. What about you, Cletus?
I actually liked him. I thought Ocean Master was actually a really good villain in this, to be honest. And I liked the sort of subtlety with it, where they have the scene where he says, you know, I actually don't want to kill you. And I actually believed that. It seemed like he didn't really have the desire to kill Arthur for most of the film. Because then as soon as he sees his mom, he does legitimately seem to drop it off. It seems to be hatred of this brother being the cause of the death of his mom. Mm. And I thought that was kind of, to me, that was really interesting. And I thought his look was like so spot on. That was incredible. Mm. When he puts on his costume at the end, I was like, oh man, that looked really good. I loved Black Manta, though. Don't get me wrong. So like, I'm saying I like Ocean Master better, but just because I thought he was everything I want out of the major villain in a film. And I thought the way they set up Black Manta, like you were saying, is perfect, because the core thing with Black Manta is his just indescribable level of hatred of Aquaman. Like, it's just, his hatred just goes beyond a normal human level for a person. And you can't really do that, I don't think, in one movie. Like, you could have that scene happen at the beginning of the second film where his dad dies, but then I don't know. It feels like it would just still, the arc wouldn't quite be as satisfying as seeing it happen in this film, letting it linger, having him continue to clash with Aquaman and seeing him just hate him more and more and more. And so when you finally have that epic clash in what presumably will be a second film, I think it's going to pay off a lot more. I feel like there's going to be a lot more emotional stake in that by setting it up in a movie earlier.
I also think it works really well because that allowed him, by being the B-villain, to get the Atlantean tech as just being like adjunct to Orm in this movie. But then, yeah, he can carry that forward into the next movie. So I think that worked structurally when you think of this as going to have continuing movies also.
All right. What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, you know, I'm struggling with this question because I really enjoyed both of these villains. And I thought... Well, Patrick Wilson was excellent as Orm, just terrific, I thought. And I'm really bad at recognizing actors when I'm watching a movie. So I didn't even, like, my wife, every time I see Patrick Wilson, my wife has to whisper to me, "That's Patrick Wilson. You know him. He was Night Owl." And I go, "Oh yeah, okay, I know that guy." But I thought he was terrific. And the actor who played Black Manta was someone I was not familiar with. Yeah, I'm looking at his name right now. Yeah, Yahya Abdul Mateen. Wow, I'm sure I'm butchering that name, but he was wow, he was great. I'm a little leery of when you throw two big villains into a movie together, that kind of Batman Returns syndrome of we don't need this we don't need Penguin and Catwoman all at once all together. I think it worked in this case, in that Black Manta had a logical flow to his character as being the sort of the B villain, the supporting villain. It worked really nicely, and yeah, it sets up the next movie. I think he was probably the more fun, probably had the more fun scenes to watch. So I feel like that kind of gives him the nod, but it's sort of easier, I think, whereas Orm had more of the arc of the major story weighing him down, just all that political struggles for Atlantis and all that, which is not as fun, but bigger. It's like Senator Palpatine is the bigger villain, but Darth Maul has the cooler scenes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good comparison.
All right. For me, it was Black Manta. I liked him better as the better villain, but I do like the fact that even though Ocean Master was the main villain, they didn't focus too much on Black Manta. They gave him his little origin there, and then he was gone for a little while, and then he came back for a little bit. I like the fact they did that, and that they focused more on Ocean Master as the main villain. He felt a little flat to me at times, or one note, but overall he was an okay villain. Mm. I'm very excited for next movie, seeing Black Manta come back, because it felt like the introduction to his character in this is going to be even. It feels like he's going to be even a bigger villain in the next movie.
Now, what I'm curious of, I think we're going to get Ocean Master in the next movie too. And I think not necessarily as a bad guy.
Mm.
That was one of the more intriguing things at the end, where you have Aquaman turns to him and says, "When you're ready, let's talk." And maybe that nothing comes of that, but maybe we actually get some scenes with that. That would be rare for a superhero movie, apart from Loki. Really, Loki's the only example I can think of where you have a villain carry over into the next one and not necessarily be the villain again, but be something else.
That's possible.
The other thing that they, I'm sorry, the other thing that I was going to say, that they could play the idea that here Arthur said, like, "Hey, the surface world isn't really your enemy," and then the Black Manta, like, just like starts like attacking Atlantis, and it kind of becomes like, "Hey, wait a minute, you said that they weren't our enemy," so it might politically start swinging the other way, and it might be a problem for him that way. So it might be interesting if they continue to play with that idea.
All right, well, we get to see different realms of Atlantis in this movie, and I like the fact that the movie went into the history of Atlantis, and that Arthur was trained with his knowledge by Volcro. I thought it made perfect sense that he would have been taught his mother's heritage, especially since his father approved of him learning his mother's heritage. The other thing I really liked was the key to unlocking that trident he had to get was using his telepathy powers. Because from what I could tell, none of the other Atlanteans seem to have that ability except for the first ruler of Atlantis. And I'm kind of glad that the movie addressed that. What did you guys think of the different realms of Atlantis? Let's start with you, Kevin.
Yeah, it was hard to even keep up with it all. I mean, they were throwing so much information in different worlds and the different groups, and it was wonderful. I love just seeing more and more and more, just again, that epic world building that they did. I thought it was great, but I also feel like I have to see the movie again and stand a better chance of taking it all in, because I like that. And that's something that, I mean, DC Comics, I don't know when they started, that must go back to the 80s at least, if not earlier. They started kind of carving up Atlantis into saying, okay, there's different sections. There's different types of people evolved in Atlantis because they had to explain, well, why do we have Aquaman's people, but then we have Laurie Lamaris from the Superman stories. And so they start explaining that by having the different sections and different groups. So I like that we're seeing that here. I thought it was really well done. Everybody just looked so cool. All the brine people and the fishermen people and fascinating, and they looked great. It was just I want to go back and get a second look at everything because that was just a lot to take in.
All right, what about you, Nathan?
I thought it was great. I mean, like I was saying, I like the fact that they just went for it. And so we have we have these people who look like giant crustaceans, and we've got the ones that look like mermaid types. And we've got even the two that look humanoid, you got the one group that rides on seahorses and the other group that rides on sharks, And I was like, oh, so that's cool. So they're showing sort of different cultural, differences between them. Atlantis itself looked amazing, like the city, under the sea, and all the boats or ships or submersible, whatever you want to call them, that we're going to and from and everything. And just I thought that it was great that they showed this whole world, and it was realized so well visually. And so I felt that really added to the experience of the film.
All right, what about you, Cletus?
I actually thought it was the strongest point of the film, to be honest. The world building that they did with this movie was just incredible. I mean, like you guys are saying, seeing the different kingdoms was so cool. And I found myself, every time I found it, I saw a new one, I was like, oh man, that's so cool. Like, can I get 15 more minutes exploring the world that we're seeing with that? Yeah, no, I just, every time they went to a new kingdom, I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, tell me more about this. This is awesome. That's something I'm hoping that we get more of in the second one. I'm hoping that they don't focus on Aquaman going to the surface or something. Like, my biggest takeaway coming out of this movie is I want to spend more time in this giant underwater world that they've created with all these different kingdoms.
I thought the trench scene was pretty awesome. It felt, the way they portrayed it with all those, I don't know what you call them, those monster fish or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The way they chased after him, and it just seemed like it was unescapable.
Yeah, it makes me wonder how his mom survived, because it's like they only survived because they had the flare, and they had all those flares, and it's just like, she's like, oh yeah, I got through them and I ended up here too, and I'm like, how? Because they barely made it out, and they had light,
Yeah, I thought they portrayed that pretty well, the trench scene.
So the kingdom that's in the middle of the earth was another thing that the group I was with was nitpicking. And I was like, okay, I know it's ridiculous that there's this secret kingdom in the middle of the earth. I know that's like a super cheesy sci-fi thing. But like, my thing was if you are accepting watching a movie about a dude that can live underwater and talk to fish, but the fact that there's a kingdom in the middle of the earth is too much for you. Like, I was like, you can accept that he can talk to fish and that he lives in a world where a guy dresses up as a bat to fight criminals. Like, all of that isn't weird. But the kingdom there, that's weird. That's too, like, I can't handle that. I was like, come on, guys.
Yeah, that's it's ridiculous, but it's all ridiculous. So you just have to roll with it.
Yeah. I mean, have these guys not seen a superhero movie in the last 10 years?
Well,
how do they handle Infinity War?
Superhero group that I go with. It was, like I said, like, it was not, that was not the reaction I got out of it. And I was like, man, that was really good. And I saw a bunch of blank faces looking back at me. I was like, oh no.
Well, because I mean, like, if you can accept Thor, you can accept like the Infinity War and stuff like that. It's like, how is Aquaman like, oh, that's just too much.
I don't know. Like I said, I didn't get it. I was surprised at the reaction from the group.
We did get a little bit of Thor in this movie. Didn't we have the bridge you could only get into Atlantis from?
Yeah.
I maybe think of the Bifrost a little bit. The whole thing, honestly, I thought the whole thing it felt a lot like an underwater Thor, where you have the different worlds, similar to like how Thor has those different worlds that is another one they've never really fully explored either. I the whole thing felt very reminiscent of Thor.
Yeah, people have CG'd, they've altered the poster for the movie and taken out the name Aquaman and put Wet Thor.
Sure, I guess coming right down to switching out the trident for the hammer.
Alright, well, let's give our last thoughts on the movie, and let's rate the movie on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the best rating. Let's start with you, Kevin.
Five is the best rating. Oh man, I guess I'm gonna go. I want to go four, but that sounds too high. But I'm gonna do it anyway. Let's say if Wonder Woman's a five, I can give this one a four, and I think this is safely the second best of this current crop of DC movies by a healthy margin. I'd say Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and then there's a big drop off after that. As far as a final thought, just because I don't think we've mentioned it yet, but man, I loved seeing that octopus banging on the drums. Nice. I mean, I want a Blu-ray extra 20-minute extended drum solo of that octopus, and I hope that was Topo.
All right. What about you, Nathan?
Do you guys do decimals, or do we just do the full 1, 2, 3, 4?
You can do decimals.
Yeah, I think 3.5 is what I'm going to go for, because 3 is too low. But like Kevin, I think that 4 is too high. Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I loved the score. I loved the visuals of the movie. I felt like it was a fun adventure story. And Black Manta, oh my God. I just can't express how much I love Black Manta. That the fact that they just looked like he stepped out of, you know, comic page, like right onto the screen. It was just so thrilling to me. But yeah, I mean, there were some, like, I didn't think that the leads were the strongest. I felt like there were a few logical problems and structural problems. Like, logically, I don't know how Orm discovered that Vulko was against him. And if he knew all along, then why did he let Vulko go that long? And if he didn't know all along, how did he find out? And I felt like that was a flaw in the movie. I also felt like the structure of having your hero fight the villain on the hero's turf for the end of the scene was, you know, weak, because, you know, that makes that final battle anticlimactic, because it's an Aquaman's advantage, whereas you want him to be coming from behind usually for your climax. So I thought structurally that was a little, it made it a little weaker of a movie. But overall, the fact that they built the world, like Lita said, that's the strongest part of the movie to me too. The fact that, they did a movie that was overall positive. So there's not sort of like the grim, dark, you know, depressing feel that a lot of the DC movies have had lately. And, you know, the fact that they set up, you know, the sequel and everything, I felt like this movie did a lot of really good things. And so I am looking forward to a sequel. And I think it was definitely way better. The positive way outweighs the negative.
All right. What about you, Cletus?
I actually agree completely with the rating. If I think it's a 3.5 for me too. I loved the visuals. I thought there was just some, like, the dive down with the flare was incredible. The costume design was, like, just spot on. Not just Black Manta, who was awesome, but Aquaman, when he gets his costume, is incredible. Ocean Master looks perfect, too. Mira looked great, too, even though the actress wasn't great, but, like, her costume spot on. I mean, just all of that was really great. I thought it was let down a little bit by the acting. I thought it was let down a little bit occasionally by the writing. And by the flute scene. But overall, I really enjoyed it. For me, it's I have a controversial opinion, but I actually enjoyed Man of Steel overall. So for me, it's the third best DC movie for me personally. But yeah, I would line right up for a sequel to this. I really want to explore that world more. I mean, it was so cool, the different worlds. Like the mermaid one was super intriguing. We only got like 5 minutes with that. The crab people, I'd want to see more with them. The trench was really cool. I'd love to see more stuff done with the trench. I thought that tapped well into the director's horror roots. I'd love to see them do more with that. I mean, just, yeah, I am very interested in the world that they created.
All right, and I'm going to give it a 4. And I'm giving it a 4 because I just loved it. I went to the movie theater expecting it to be a little worse than what it was. And when I, you know, sitting through it, watching it, even with all its flaws, I really enjoyed it. And I love the fact it had a happy ending. I mean, what DC movie have we seen recently that's had a happy ending to it?
The dad gets the happy ending too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that, how the origin story, how it came circled back around to that happy ending with the dad. And it just seemed like an overall positive movie. Mm-hmm. Instead of being so dark and grim, which is what we've been used to lately. So I really enjoyed it. And to me, out of these recent batch of DC movies, I'd have to put it two under Wonder Woman. That's how much I enjoyed this. And I'm very excited about seeing more Black Manta in the next one. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Nathan?
Sorry, I wasn't expecting that. Yeah, check out the 42cast. We're covering the Berlanti stuff a little bit late, but last year's Berlanti seasons, and so the Supergirl one will be the final one, and that should be out in a week or two. So watch for that.
Awesome. I'll be listening. All right, what about you, Kevin?
Well, yeah, my little corner of the ESO network is the Flopcast. So that's our very silly, goofy show that we do here on ESO every single week. So find me there at the Flopcast. And also, if anybody's in the Boston area, if you're going to be around later this month, actually, January 18th through the 21st, I will be appearing at a science fiction and fantasy convention called Aresia. So come, I'm doing a bunch of panels. Stop on by if you're around here, and we'll hang out and have a goofy weekend.
All right. What about you, Cletus? What's your shout out for this week?
So my comics recommendations for this, two comics I definitely thought were heavy inspirations for the movie were the first New 52 volume by Geoff Johns, Aquaman Volume 1, The Trench. You can assume which creatures are inspired in the movie from that. And then also the Throne of Atlantis storyline, which I think is the third volume of Justice League. Aquaman has some titles in it too, but really the Justice League title is the meat of the story. And it's basically Ocean Master attacking the surface world. Really good. Both of those, I think, are really great Aquaman comics. If you enjoyed the movie, there's no way you won't enjoy those comics. I mean, they just, a lot of the storylines are heavily inspired in the movie. And then also, I just want to thank Kevin and Nathan for coming on our show, guys. Thank you very much for helping us out.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Anytime.
All right. And for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about the DC Spotlight Aquaman, which is on the DC Universe app. It gives you the whole history of Aquaman, starting from his first appearance in whatever comic I said earlier, number 73, all the way up to the Aquaman movie. So it's about, I think it's like a 45-minute documentary, but it's really interesting if you'd like to learn the history of Aquaman. And they hit on the highlights of all his important things through DC history. So very interesting documentary. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line at 317-564-9133, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we're going to be reviewing the final two episodes of the Titans series, episode 10 and episode 11. We'll also be talking Titans issue number 29 through 32 and Nightwing number 54 and 55. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move out.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.